Father Christopher Scythe, welcome to Power and Witness. And you've come out with a new book. We've had you on the show before.
Yes, thank you.
And it's about finding God in the world. Mm-hmm. A reflection on Pieper's thought.
That's right. Yeah, it's not yet published, but it will be shortly. So I wrote my dissertation on Joseph Pieper, and just so much of my way of interacting with reality and just like perceiving the world has been influenced by Pieper's thought. And I just think he has a really helpful way of giving a real Catholic worldview to Christians who think they already have a Christian worldview. But just by virtue of living in the modern world, we actually don't, and we don't realize that. And so I think Pieper really restores this vision of reality and of God to us in a beautiful way. So I wanted to present his work to people.
And he's a Thomist.
Yes, it depends on, if you were to ask him, he wouldn't say that.
Really?
He would say he's a student or a disciple of St. Thomas. But he didn't like to be categorized too much into what people typically would say are Thomists. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, he's certainly a student of St. Thomas and presents Thomas's works in a very, I think, intelligible way for us.
And have you noticed, does he bring in Augustine or somebody else?
I would say he also brings in a lot of Plato.
Okay.
So he's heavily influenced by St. Thomas and by Plato. Mm-hmm. Augustine a bit, but not as much.
Okay. And your field of study is, what was your degrees in?
Yeah, I got my doctorate in moral theology.
Oh, wow.
So, especially looking at Pieper's thought on the vice of acedia, spiritual sloth, spiritual sadness, spiritual apathy, really, and his thought on that and how it relates to our use of phones, devices.
Yeah, it's like crack cocaine to feed us.
Very much. Gosh, I know.
Maybe we could talk about that for a minute. I guess.
about crack or about... I don't know.
Talk about that. But I had heard one of the writers, spiritual writers, talk about the solution to it is to do your focus on the duty in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of engage reality.
Yes.
Talk about that.
So a lot of acedia is a flight from self. The way Pieper puts it, he says that man is nauseated and bored by the void of an interior life gutted by despair. So we're just trying to get out of this despairing.
So he was a German, right, that lived, when did he die?
He died in 1997. He was born in 1904.
I don't know that one.
And he actually introduced his friend Joseph Ratzinger to Karol Wojtyła.
Oh, really?
So that worked out well for the church.
Yeah. And he knew Karol Wojtyła well?
Not super well, but they had met at a symposium at the Angelicum in Rome.
Okay.
And just, they were both students of St. Thomas, so they met there and, kind of hit it off well. And
So let's talk more about the solution. How do we get out of this malaise?
Yes, good. So staying in your cell, right, is what the Desert Fathers would say. Just don't leave where you are. So for us, right, there's this sadness that expresses itself in a desire to get out and do other things just so that I can avoid being with myself. Mm. And so simply by doing what we're supposed to do, we have to suffer the limitedness of our existence, that I can't be somewhere else. And in suffering the limitedness of my existence, it actually opens my heart to longing for the infinite, right? Wow, I'm here, I'm only in this present moment, and I want to be in these other places. I want to be everywhere. Ultimately, it's this longing for heaven, this longing to be able to transcend our limited existence through communion. And so we have to really suffer that limitedness in order to enter into communion with God. And so, yeah, I think simply, and again, this is why we don't normally think about this, but even, okay, I'm driving. And so, of course, while I'm driving, well, I'm going to make a phone call or I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, okay, good, we can get more done, but am I forgetting how to simply drive? Mm-hmm. Am I forgetting how to simply do the thing I'm doing? Mm-hmm. And it can really dispose us away from our own humanity, which is the humanity that Jesus Christ assumed. Mm-hmm. And so it takes us away from communion with God in the incarnation. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yesterday afternoon, in fact, I've been meaning, we had a bird feeder and it's been empty, and so I got to refill that. We are in a drought down here. And I need to water this, that. And it's like, I just started doing those chores. And I was feeling kind of sad yesterday afternoon. But as soon as I started doing that, it just picked me right out of that.
Yeah.
I was like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. I don't even know what happened, really. But it's like, I look at it too, like you're engaging your life. And there's a fullness there,
yes.
Right? That I think sounds like. I never connected that with the church or the, what do you call them?
The Desert Fathers.
Desert Fathers, mm-hmm. I've heard that. Yeah, stay in your cell, you know, whatever. Yeah, you want to do this, okay, that's great, but just stay in your cell.
That's right. Do what you want. Just don't leave. Yeah.
And I never thought of that in terms of like staying in the present moment.
Yeah.
That's how it applies to us today.
Yeah. And I think one of the things it does is we can have this illusion of control, right? Mm-hmm. If we're everywhere at once, it's like, oh good, I'm in control of this facet of my life and this facet of my life all at once.
Yeah.
And what happens then is that I never have to suffer something not in my control happening to me. Mm. But if we do that, we really close ourselves off to love, right? Because love of its nature requires that I not be in control,
yeah, right? Yeah.
Like if I'm going to actually enter into a loving relationship with someone, I have to let go of control,
right.
You know, of how this person is going to give himself or herself to me. I can't manipulate that. I can't fabricate that, or else I don't get to receive the gift of the other. And so if we live more and more in this illusion of control by trying to be everywhere at once and do everything at once, we really close ourselves off to the joy of heaven, which is, again, this joy of loving communion in God.
Yeah, I heard a lady from Africa one time say she'd immigrated to this country and, you know, she saw the blessings of being here and everything. And she said, but a lot of people have this illusion of control. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have the more desperate situations, you know, you don't have control over mm-hmm. But we could have this illusion that, yep. Yeah.
It's actually one of Joseph Pieper's abiding suspicions of American culture mm-hmm. was its inability to admit of the tragic dimension in life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That he found something in American culture. He was like, this is a people that doesn't know or accept tragedy.
I had a friend from France. He was very French. The best of the worst.
Sure, yeah.
He had a wonderful gift in so many ways. But he just thought that was a complete joke that these American movies end on a positive note. He said all these French films are like tragics.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, it leaves us very disturbed. And I guess the blessing is the American has got the can-do spirit. We're going to, you know, we expect to have victory. In one sense, it's true. I mean, we know it ends well.
But it's always that ending well is an act of God. And it can really frustrate our human sensitivities, right? Yeah. When you look at the crucifixion, you don't see this is someone ending well.
Right, right.
And yet, it's exactly, right, ending well, manifest in the resurrection. But we want to bypass the crucifixion to get to the resurrection. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, well, Lord, we've got this. We know how success is going to look. We know, and we can do this in our spiritual lives too.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, well, I know what Saint Christopher looks like. So I just need to get myself there. Rather than going through the adventure of life, which is really hard and like sometimes looks like I'm not moving in the right direction, but it's always with God.
Yeah.
And I need to get, like, the invitation is to give ourselves more to Him. Mm-hmm. And let Him accomplish the work He wants to accomplish.
Yeah. I know sometimes some of us can, like, kind of worst case scenario, you know, we can kind of jump to kind of expect the worst. Mm. And that's not good either.
A stoic prema tutsi malorum is what they would say.
Yeah.
That this, I'm not going to get my hopes up, because I'm just going to assume it's not going to go well. It's a way of really distancing ourselves from the pain of loss, right?
Yeah. And I guess the Christian answer, is to focus on God, that we're trusting Him. Yeah, it could go very badly, but He'll be with us in it.
Yeah, it's hoping, like, in a way that isn't able to know what the salvation looks like.
Mm.
Right, it's still hoping. Yes, Lord, you will bring fulfillment. I have no clue what that's going to look like or how that's going to happen.
Right,
but I trust you.
Right. And there is the cross in our life, and everybody's got some very tough stuff. I remember years ago, Father Benedict Groeschel, I was probably a postulant, and he was giving us a retreat. You know, he's from New Jersey, living in New York, and. You know, he sees humanity sometimes at its worst.
Yes.
And he's a psychologist.
Yep,
right?
Yep.
But I remember him telling this story, I hope I got this right, about Frank Sheed, that towards the end of Frank Sheed's life, somebody asked him, would you like to do it all over again? He goes, no, of course not. there's this hardship of life to it that hopefully we're growing closer to the Lord, but it's like the now, like there's a blessing now, right?
Yes.
My relationship with Christ.
And I think that's what embracing suffering does for us, is it allows us to recognize my life as a gift.
Yeah.
And rather than something that I've accomplished, or it's just all is gift, right? Yeah. And we get to the end of our lives, and to be able to give gratitude to the Lord for what He has done.
Yeah,
that's kind of the goal, right? It's very Eucharistic.
Yeah,
offering ourselves to the Father in Jesus Christ for what He has accomplished.
And that suffering's got a powerful way of, like, just detaching us from this world, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're trying to wring something out of this world that, you know, the greatest moments are passing.
Yeah.
I can't hold on to the thing of yesterday, right? I need something right now.
Yes.
Right? And.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, I know. I sometimes think of the suffering, the sacrifice of celibacy in this way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've read Lord of the Rings, at the end, so Frodo, you know, he's a hobbit, he's like wanting to save the Shire, mm-hmm. he's wanting to save his homeland, and he goes back at the end and he realizes, like, after all the suffering that he's been through and everything that's happened, he's like, the Shire is no longer home for him.
Mm.
He can't just go back. And he says, I've been too deeply wounded. And I sometimes think of, like, the celibate is the one who has been too deeply wounded by the beauty that awaits in heaven, that this world is no longer enough.
Oh, wow.
And I think, he says, like, And precisely by giving that up, we're able to see this world in its right light. Yes, it's beautiful and good, and marriage is such a gift, and yet it points to something else.
Yeah.
And so to live in that wound, I think, is the invitation of the celibate, but also the invitation of anyone who experiences suffering to recognize, mm-hmm. oh, this world, there's more. There's so much more.
Yeah.
And to be longing for that heaven that awaits.
this tired world cannot deliver, right?
Yes.
And where does he go at the end of the story?
He goes to the Undying Lands.
Okay.
He goes to the land of the elves, their true home, where they,
And Sam?
Sam stays in the Shire for a time.
He marries the girl with ribbons, right?
Rosie Cotton. Yes. He marries. But at the end of his life, he eventually takes a boat, because he too, having suffered with Frodo, he also has been too deeply wounded. And so at the end of his life, he hops in a boat and sails across the sea to the Undying Lands himself.
Yeah. I think there is that thing in us, right? We just desire more.
Yeah.
And there's a theme in the gospel that he is the more,
right,
for us.
Yeah.
And we need to find that and have a relationship with him. But I like what you said about the relationships, you know, to focus on the now and the present moment with that. And I know, you know, we have aging family members, and it's easy to get caught up what it used to be like, right? Mm. I remember my grandfather, he used to be 95, I think, and he was in a nursing home, and I think my brother and I were with him, and we took him out, we went to Denny's, and I was just thinking the whole time, gosh, I remember when my grandmother was alive, she'd make this wonderful breakfast, we'd sit around and talk, and now we're in a Denny's, you know.
Yes.
by this four-legged
sucking.
And I remember at this point, he was just putting all his maple syrup on his pancakes and all this sugar in the coffee. And I said, well, I called him Pops. I said, Pops, do you think you should be eating all that sugar? He said, do you think I give a damn about my sugar level? But anyway, I you know, we can, but still, if you're in the present moment, you look at this opportunity that, hey, I'm loving him, trying to serve, I just enjoy this time with him, this communion with him.
Yeah.
And in a way, it had a new beauty to it, you know, in his suffering and everything.
Yeah.
It was a different experience of him. You know, I can remember driving around and I was playing these old 40s music, big band, and that was his era, right? And I look over at him, he's sitting there like tapping his foot, you know, and he does some of the songs, you know, and it's like, we never did that before.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think the focus on the person is still there.
Yeah.
The situation's more difficult, but he's still there, right? And we can have this relationship with him.
Yeah. And it also, even just the, like, missing the things that were.
Mm-hmm.
It just highlights the transiency of this world.
Yeah.
You know, and so it makes us long for, you know, Pops when he's kind of fully Pops again. But but I can't live back there.
Right.
I have to live where he is right now and be with him in this.
Yeah.
So that I can long, basically long for salvation, right? Long for redemption in our lives.
Yeah, that's something my brother, like, years ago, he would, like, so I had three of my grandparents living in their 90s, and they kind of died around a handful of years of each other. And I remember he would talk about that, you know, we'll all be together again.
Mm.
And it's like, for me, usually that just wasn't enough. But now the older I get, that's pretty powerful, you know, that this passing world is short.
Yes.
And it's like, we're looking for an eternity where every tear will be wiped away, right?
Yes.
And, that is more meaningful when you really think about it. When you realize that, that this world can't deliver what I want, what I need. And
we taste it. We get a glimpse of it, right? In those moments that, you know, everybody's just fully himself in the...
Yeah.
But those don't last. You know, nobody would want, like... I love my family. It's such a gift. But, like, I don't want all of us to be in the living room together for eternity.
Right.
But there's something that happens when all of us are in the living room that touches eternity.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what I want. It's just, there's that something when we're kind of approaching the fullness And it's that that we're looking for.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So when Pieper talks about reality, I when you told me that earlier, I thought the first thing is being. You know, Thomas has these great teachings on being and the importance. Did you talk about some of those things in the book?
A bit. Yeah, not a lot. It's more for Pieper, when he looks at the created world, he's always approaching it from the perspective of, well, precisely this perspective of creation, which means God is always holding creation in existence and making it be what it is. And so it's a participation in the life of God, in the mind of God, and in the heart of God.
That's the Platonic.
Yes. Kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, because what St. Thomas does is basically take the forms, you know, Plato's forms, and kind of move them into the mind of God.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so to be able to approach, he invites us, Pieper invites us to approach creation as an icon, something that makes present what it represents of God, in a very tangible way. It's not just ideas. It's a reality that we have.
The thing has an intelligibility about it.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Because it's known by God first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So God makes it what it is, and because of that, we can know what it is. And in our knowing, we're united to God.
Because to even know, we need God's, I forgot the terms, agent intellect or something.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But
yeah.
We need like God's illumination.
His light.
Mm-hmm. His light to even know the thing. Mm-hmm. Which to me is like, whoa, I'm amazed how Thomas and them came about this, you know. And,
yeah.
And I never thought of, there's a great significance to it. I am forgetting what it was this now, but yeah. But just that we need God just for everything. Right?
Well, and this, the way I think of it is my mom's an artist. And so sometimes you'll like go into our art studio and you're just like, what on earth are you doing? For a while, she was making paper. Mm-hmm. But it looked like I went in to her art studio and it was like mush. I was like, what am I looking at? I don't even know what this is. And then when she said, it's paper, it all came to light for me. I was like, oh, I can see this now. Mm-hmm. So we can't know what something is unless we already know it almost, you know? Like only when I knew paper was able to see the thing correctly.
Right.
And so it's sort of like that, where only when we know God are we able to see things as they truly are.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah, well, that's consoling to me too. It's like we were talking about celibacy and things, like especially like a young person, you want the fullness of the world, right? And so and the world's telling us, well, God's holding you back, right? But it's like this fullness exists in the mind of God as I come closer to Him, and you know, I experience it in heaven, that the fullness of all His creation, I'll experience the goodness of it, however mysterious way this happens in heaven. And I'm not missing out.
Yeah. And because the mortal body right now can't contain the fullness.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it needs to be transformed and transfigured.
And Thomas taught, right, that God is being itself, that we're contingent, He's only us in existence. And I know He draws meditations from the burning bush and Moses, and, you know, it doesn't consume itself. It doesn't burn itself out. You know, take off your shoes. You know, we're contingent. We're a creature. But what does that, I don't know if you discuss that at all in the book, but what does that mean to be being itself?
I know. I don't really discuss that too much in the book. It's a good question, Father Mark. What does it mean to be being itself, right? And I think what I do say maybe in the book is that we can only approach that mystery negatively. Mm. We can only know what it's not, right? Okay, so we have these moments where something is so alive. And but we know, like, this is not the fullness of being. This is not the fullness of life. Mm-hmm. But it does awaken us to a fullness that we can't experience this side of heaven. Mm. And so I think, and we also have it when we're just disappointed, right? So this is the suffering that Pieper talks about and the need for that, where it's when we're disappointed with things and we realize, oh, this world doesn't satisfy. We have insights into being itself because of suffering the limitedness of participatory being, mm-hmm. that we're not being itself.
Yeah.
And yet it does, precisely in knowing that it doesn't satisfy, we have a glimpse mystically of being. Mm.
And I was listening to this wonderful talk by Bishop Barron on beauty, mm-hmm. and he's talking about the transcendentals of beauty,
yeah.
that all being of being, the transcendentals uh-huh. of being, that all being has these characteristics of beauty, of goodness and truth. And he was drawing from Thomas that, you know, like the goodness of something is like it draws us in the will to that thing, that I want that.
And yes.
I want to some degree, some communion with it. I want to yes. experience it or something. And the truth part, how a being is truth,
yes.
is that it has this intelligibility.
Yeah.
You know, I can recognize it. I can abstract universals from being and recognize it, or, you know, study it, or yeah. and all that kind of stuff. And I think Balthasar emphasizes the wholeness of it. Kind of the Western mind, like, really wants to dissect it. But he was saying another thing. I thought this was great. Balthasar wants to look at it, and the phenomenologists, mm-hmm. I think, they want to look at it in its fully living reality, like a plant or something. Mm-hmm. And but this thing that got me, he said, the beauty part, though, is like the first thing that draws us. The will is moved by this goodness of it and the truth, but the beauty captures our attention. There's something so immediate that draws us yeah. to things. And he said that Thomas, you know, talking about like the claritas aspect mm-hmm. of beauty,
yeah.
that it's like the inner form. And I never understood this, because on one level, I think Thomas talks about the brightness of things, but it doesn't I mean, everything's got to be Renaissance art or bright colors, right, you know. But like the inner form radiating
yes.
through it.
Yes. Yeah, and this is something that Pieper talks about a good bit. So yeah. I do talk about this in the book. Yeah. It's a lot of fun because, yeah, the inner form of something radiating outward externally. So when we're talking about beauty, we are talking about something that is apprehensible to our senses. Mm-hmm. And we talk about somebody being made beautiful where it's like, this person's face is communicating who he is, mm-hmm. you know? And when yeah. somebody's true, mm-hmm. there's a clarity. It's mm-hmm. like the external is so like, is just oozing with who the person is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
everything about this person is just yeah. communicating itself outward. And I think there is something beautiful about that.
Yeah.
And John Paul II talks about this in Veritate Splendor, which is his encyclical on the moral life, which he begins really with the reflection on the beauty of Christ, mm-hmm. right? The splendor of truth.
Right.
That it's in Christ what is radiating out of every facet of his humanity is his divine personhood, mm-hmm. and that God is fully presenting himself in Christ. They're in Colossians, right? Yeah. In him, the fullness of deity is pleased mm-hmm. to dwell. Just to have encountered that beauty yeah. in the flesh, yeah, would obviously captivate anyone.
Yeah. And it what rang true to me, because I thought, yeah, why does we think of things like things that are beautiful? In one sense, you think, well, it must be ornate, it must be whatever. But mm-hmm. I was watching this documentary on the current great track sprinter, you know, in this country, and the 100 meter guy, and And they just had a couple of clips of him like doing these little sprints, you know, not in a competition, but just practicing his start or something. And I was just struck by like the symmetry of his movement, like the body. You know, like most of it, like you can look on your iPhone and see, it can tell you the asymmetry to your walk. And I'm always like shocked by, I forgot what my numbers are, but it's like, you know, I don't have a peg leg or something. But this guy, he moves so fluid, and his legs and everything, his upper body was just so, you know, it wasn't shifting around and all this stuff. And it was just poetry. I understand why this guy's got some records, you know?
Sure.
And I thought that there's a beauty to that.
Yeah.
You know, and you see that in sports, but you know, this beauty's all over the place. And so I was just struck by the inner form of intuiting or somehow that being revealed to you what a thing is. And I guess like great paintings and it's weird, like you can have very realistic style, you can have an impressionistic style, but somehow it captures like the inner form of this scene.
And I think if I can jump in real quick, because what you were saying also reminds me of our role of decorating things. Mm-hmm. You know, in like adoration, for example, we make the monstrance beautiful because we want the inner form of the Eucharist to be externally accessible to us.
Right.
And in order to do that, it's like, well, we have to make this beautiful. We have to show, make this monstrance ornate. And we do this with people too, right? When someone wins a victory of some sort, you know, the Olympics, for example, mm-hmm. right? You put a medal over them, or in the ancient world, right? You'd crown them with a garland, you know?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Because we want to say, like, there's an external greatness that we want to make manifest.
Yeah.
And this is what awaits us in eternal glory, is when God clothes us with his own glory.
Right.
And it is externally manifest the life of God within us.
Yeah.
But we do this here on earth in really beautiful ways. And I think it's important that we recognize that our decorations, whether it's our clothing, our hairstyle, all of this is in some way intended to externally communicate some internal reality.
Yeah, yeah. And does he write about maybe like the differences between men and women on this? Because
Pieper doesn't.
He doesn't.
Not that.
Yeah. Because I think about that sometimes. You know, women obviously have a special image, I think, of the beauty of God. But why? I mean, it's in both sexes, but it's like something about, I think, the male is like, he's there like to give of himself, you know, he's kind of suited to outward activity, and there could be a beauty to that. It seems like the woman radiates something just from herself and her being, you know.
Yeah, I think he alludes to it in a few places, but he doesn't go into it too much. But I agree, I think there is something of femininity that does this in a more natural way, that communicates beauty. And I think maybe it's just because of her proximity to the created world, to nature,
to life. Right?
To life, exactly. Yeah. Her very being is like the world, cyclical, you know, and so she has this way of externalizing her interiority, whereas man is going to be much more inclined to. Almost like, this is going to sound negative. Well, maybe modern man at least is going to be inclined to dominate and manipulate. But in a healthy masculinity, it's to have dominion. But there's always a little bit more distance for the man. And I think he needs woman to draw him into the intimacy of the connection between internal and external.
Yeah, it seems like he, in a sense, kind of more easily like loses himself, gives himself. I heard someone reflect how like a little boy, you know, he'll jump off of things just to test how high it is or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
You know, like he'll use his body as an instrument.
Yes, yes.
And I thought that's so true. And it's kind of, I think, part of the masculine gift. But yeah. I tell myself sometimes too, it's like, yeah, to cultivate and till the garden, which, you know, falls upon both, but it's like, I think the men have a special service role in that. And it's like, you know, to bring order. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I know my brothers would laugh at me and say, you bring order. But sometimes I think about that. Okay, that's your job here, is maybe to bring, it might just be straightening something up. Right. Or there's something pleasing about emptying the trash can and just having a little bit more order in your office or your cell or something. And it's like, there's just a thing you feel like you're doing. I don't know. To me, it's some kind of fulfilling.
And woman is given to man so that that order that he brings is an order of love. And not just an order of planning and sort of a utilitarian order of efficiency and practical affairs, but really things are ordered for the sake of love.
She's like, well, one level you can think of like the mother of the home pointing out needs of the home or the children. We need to do this, you know, this, so our son's suffering with this, you know, maybe we need to address this. I think she points stuff out to him that he needs, but also just to bring that relational character. I think that's, to me, that seems like the gift of women. They're just, you think about it, a helper suited for him. And yes, they're supposed to give mutual help, but she's brought in there, like in the realm of relationship, right? In a particular way, I think, to foster it, to bring that order of love, the primacy of love. And it's so key. So with being in creation, leading us to God, and Pieper's thoughts on that, I often think of Augustine and the Franciscans were saying these are vestiges of God, right? These are footprints to God. They specialize, especially Francis, with nature. So what does Pieper bring to the conversation?
What I think Pieper, his gift in many ways is he brings us back to that worldview in which St. Francis, St. Dominic lived. You know, for those who have experienced, I would argue, the ravages of modern philosophy and the Industrial Revolution. And so we don't have the same experience of the world that they had. And so even though we use a lot of the same words, they mean different things. And Pieper is able to bring us back into that worldview by communicating to modern men and women in our language, but still communicating the truth of what's been passed down.
But I guess the point I was trying to make too about the beauty part, that like God's getting our attention with that.
And the other, maybe the other thing then is what Pieper brings is the importance of leisure. He, you know, is one of his most famous books, arguably his most famous book, is Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And really, I think what he helps us recognize is that in order to encounter beauty, what's more important is having a disposition of soul. Rather than, okay, I need to know certain things, I need to see certain things. He says, no, you need to live a certain way. And ultimately, that way of that leisurely life that is given, which is really just a contemplative life, not, you know, you're just at the beach all the time. It's like a contemplative life that is, allows creation to reveal itself just as it is, and not needing to change it into something else. That contemplative posture is really given to us by worship. For Pieper, by orienting our lives towards divine worship, towards sacrificial worship of God, a contemplative posture is given to us because we're able to let go of things. Okay, I don't need to be in control. I intentionally give this over to God, and it gives me a disposition of soul that allows me to be moved by beauty and really behold beauty in a new way.
Yeah, that I remember John Paul II writing about the Sunday obligation. I forgot the Dies Domini.
Dies Domini, yeah. Yes.
And he talks, I think he mentions in there about the Sabbath rest.
Yes.
Is necessary. It's a time supremely to worship God, but also to have physical rest. Mm. And that it could help us not make a God of work.
Yes, yes.
Because the more I work, the more I have in a decent system, right? And it's like we can
or the more I work, the more I can ignore and distract myself from things I don't like about myself or about the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it, yeah, so it's like, so you're saying like that contemplative stance, receiving, focused on being itself, whatever we could see, I guess him, it's his, the vestiges and yeah. creation that points us to him.
Yeah.
And, I think about that sometimes too, like you drive through an old neighborhood or something and the neighborhood's maybe really come run down or something. And sometimes I'll imagine like, I know we have one area that they had a church there and the church is still there, but it's like, it was an Italian neighborhood. And I think about the families and the kids living here, you know, and to imagine that life was being done here, you know, and
it, yes,
it kind of, I thought some part of me said, well, it's all lost. You know, I don't even see a picture of that or whatever. And it's, but it's in the mind of God, you know, all these beautiful moments will be there that we can see and the greatness of it. But, that simple thing is about life are so powerful.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about, you're the spiritual director at the seminary, St. John Paul II Seminary in D.C. And you do a lot of direction with the young men there. Maybe there's a young man listening and said, well, how do you know you have a call to the priest?
Gosh, yeah, that's the question, right?
So I assume you have a tight answer for that.
Yeah, right. No, if only, right? This is, there's no clear, here's how you know, you know? We can't put it into an algorithm, which is part of the whole thing. It's like, at some point, you've just got to take the plunge.
Mm-hmm. And test it.
And test it and see, okay, Lord, what, as I'm growing in communion with you, that's always the focus, is growth in communion with God, with Jesus, conformity to Jesus. As I'm following him, and as I'm growing in love for him, where's my heart being led? Where is he leading my heart? What is he giving to me of his own heart? Does he want me to share in his priesthood? And so it's ultimately, it's just growing in love for God and seeing where that leads. And we know that by the desires that are awakened. But at some point also, we just need to do the best we can, make the best judgment and say, Lord, I think this is what you're asking me to do.
Yeah.
And we have such a desire for certainty in our age. There's such a fear of failure that it can be crippling. What if I commit to something I'm not 100% sure of? Well, you're never going to be 100% sure of anything. And we have to take the risk. And it's much more exciting and just living in accord with the vocation that God has given, like you grow into who God has created you to be, but we can't figure it out a priori, you know?
Yeah. I know, it seemed like a lesson. I think God likes to teach me. I find myself sometimes just like in simple situations, I can't think of an exact, like you might have some problem or issue you're anticipating and then you walk into that situation and it might be something just very temporal, that something, I need a some a part to fix this or something. And but I don't really have a plan. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I just kind of walk into it. And then I notice something that I can use that'll help me with this, right? I mean, I guess thinking like preaching too, sometimes you, things come to mind, you know, at the very last minute, you know, that you need.
Yeah.
But I think the message is, you know, you try, you don't want to be foolish or reckless, but it's like, you know, to have this trust in God and let's see what he does with this, you know, and yeah, not to be in control.
Yeah. And like to ask, okay, Lord, how are you, how do you want to make a gift of yourself in me? It's always Christ's life within us. And in the priesthood, of course, there is this unique capacity that Jesus shares with a man to make a gift of himself to the church, which is just the greatest gift, you know? It's
right.
Just remarkable that, that Christ allows a man to participate in his own gift of self to the church. And so, Lord, you know, that's the prayer. Like, okay, Lord, how do you want to make a gift of self in me and through me? And also the other thing I'll say is if a man in asking this discovers he wants like growth or he's growing in desire for marriage, that doesn't mean he's not called to the priesthood. He should be growing a desire for marriage. That's just a good, healthy, masculine desire. And if you don't have that, you like would not make a good priest.
Right.
And so it's more, okay, Lord, yes, I have this desire, but are you asking me to make an even greater gift of self? Is in a certain sense, marriage not enough to express this life? Have I been too deeply wounded, Jesus, by your heart that I have to express this externally in a celibate way? As much as beautiful as marriage is, as good as it is, are you asking me to be more concretely an expression of eternity that awaits us?
I think like the women religious, I'm thinking of our contemplative nuns, you know, mothers order in Hansville, they're contemplative, right? They don't run a soup kitchen, hospital work, education. And ironically, you know, like the secular world is saying, you guys don't ordain women, you're marginalizing them, you're minimizing. But on another level, you look at it and say, we're recognizing the preciousness
such
of these
gift.
People. Yeah, yes. That they're called to just, in a special way, emphasize their relationship a life of prayer and sacrifice to Jesus. You know, and you could see the consolation, you know, women can be. I was just watching an episode of The Chosen, and there's always one scene that keeps me coming back.
I know.
I don't know if you saw this one. It's like in season 5, but he, you know, he's having the Last Supper with the men.
Oh.
But he has the one with the women. What did you think of that?
No, it's beautiful.
It wasn't a Seder meal. He was just sitting down.
Yes.
Maybe he ate something, but it was like, and there was something about that. They were gathered around him and smiling and also like weeping and, you know, and it was such a funny contrast because the apostles are always trying to figure it out, which is vitally important. Right, they're sent into the world to proclaim what exactly?
Yes.
So you got to have theology.
Sure.
But it's kind of tedious to kind of watch. You know, what are you talking about? And they're just sitting there, like soaking up his presence, focused on him,
and thanking him.
Yeah,
like you know, it was the Dianu. Like it would have been enough.
Yeah.
And so, right in the Seder meal, like historically, right, the Jews would pray the Dianu of like if God had only done this, it would have been enough. But he then went on to do this.
I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So but for, and so what they do is they say like, Jesus, if you had only done this, it would have been enough. But then you went on and did this in my life.
Yeah.
And it's a very moving scene.
Yeah.
And just to echo Father, like the I know in my own priesthood, my call to the priesthood began with the role of women who became nuns in my life. Because I can't remember if I shared this with you last time, but I when I was a university student at a very secular university, the first three girls that I asked out on dates said no because they were entering convents. And what I joke with people is that what I discovered is God and I have the same taste in women. And, but more and more I've been reflecting on Ephesians 5, where St. Paul says to husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her that he might present her to himself without blemish. And in these women who have suffered the love of Christ, you see the sacrifice of Christ received and the radiance and the beauty that is given to these women as they externally manifest this, this received love of Christ. And it's just radiant, it's beautiful. Yeah. And the priest gets to participate that, in that in his own gift of self so that he can present the church to Christ, to God in Christ, holy without blemish, right? It's always Jesus, but he allows us to participate in this work. And it's just supremely blessed and beatifying for us. Yeah, it's a great gift.
Yeah, we're told in the scriptures that he was accompanied by these holy women, you know, different moments.
We just read, yeah.
And some of them provide out of their, like, I think Mark's mother was like a home, a meeting place, I think, and stuff. So, yeah, I thought that was a beautiful thing. Now, and the spiritual writers, talk about a wounding of his love. Is that statue of Teresa of Avila in ecstasy? Mm-hmm. Does that involve like a wounding too? I can't remember.
Yes, the arrow, I think, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe describe that for someone listening. Huh. Like, what are you Catholics talking about? It's like, how does love wound us?
Yes, well, this is every spiritual, mystical writer talks about this. Mm-hmm. And I think we've all experienced it. It's the wounding, this aching, right? Mm-hmm. It's a longing. We don't do this well nowadays, suffering that, because we so quickly satisfy. We have any desire, we immediately satisfy it.
Yeah.
But we need to have these deep moments of a wounding that makes us long for, as John of the Cross says, I don't know what, right? I don't know how to articulate this what I'm looking for. Mm. So this is the if you will, the Greek passion of Eros. It's a wounding love in the encounter with beauty
that we want more.
Yes,
the wounding.
Yes, more than we can possess, and this is what is so painful about it, is that we can never say like, oh, I've got it now, you know, and now I'm wholly satisfied and everything's fine. No, it's, you know, this side of heaven, we possess it. We possess what we long for precisely in the longing, you know? And I mean, I think St. Francis, you know, the famous stigmatist, I think manifests this maybe most palpably of his own poverty of spirit that makes him capable of receiving the infinite God and really having that longing and the wound of that longing so emblazoned in his in his being.
Yeah. I was just listening to a video on prayer, and the speaker was talking about bringing our feelings to God, our thoughts to God, and our desires to God.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's something I probably don't do enough. I know I don't do enough. Like, what are your desires, you know? Yeah, and let him, like, a chance to fulfill that, or we kind of talk ourselves out of it, or we say this really isn't for me, or this isn't possible, or but I guess the yeah, just to bring those longings to him that we have. And
I a lot of times in spiritual direction, guys, you know, at the seminary, there's a rule of life and they have to pray a certain amount. And so one of the things I'll ask them sometimes is like, what's drawing you to prayer?
Yeah.
Why are you going to pray?
Right.
And it catches them off guard because they're like, well, because the rule tells me to go pray. Yeah. It's like, okay, that's not what's drawing you to prayer. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the desire? Why do you want to be with God? What's drawing you there? That's prayer happening. And we have to be attentive to what in us is drawing us to him.
Yeah. I think we'd say that like a scripture too. It's like, I've heard this advice, like, you know, trying to meditate on scripture or read the passage and what strikes you.
Yes.
What interests you.
Yeah.
What makes you curious, you know, and try to talk about that with God. You might look up a few things about it.
Yeah.
But like today's reading on Ezra, I was looking, I think this is one of the only times we even hear from Ezra.
I think
it's Monday of the 25th week. And I love this time because it's like, you know, they're being brought back from captivity and you got different prophets in play with different waves of the return. And Ezra kind of comes in late. He was like, I was reading, some people believe he was like in a later wave that, because you had Zerubbabel, who was the governor, he's heading up reconstructing the temple, which has been destroyed. And Ezra, I guess Nehemiah, they're more of a religious revival.
Yeah.
And there's this prophet Haggai who gives this great exhortation where he's like, courage, you know, Zerubbabel, courage, you know.
Yeah.
And then I have that courage to bring and rebuilding the temple and rebuilding ourselves, you could say, you know, have courage to enter the spiritual life. I think to bring these desires to Christ and say, I'm not going to try to numb it out with distraction, or I'm not going to fill it with falsity, but let's see, give Jesus a chance right?
And that's the gift. Yeah, scripture can really awaken these desires and orient them. You know, we can kind of forget like what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And so you read something like that, and you're like, I want to go back. I want the temple to be rebuilt. I want God to be known and seen in the world.
Because you mentioned this morning, King Cyrus, the Persian king, Babylonians have him in captivity. He comes in, conquers the Babylonians, and the text says that God stirs this up in him to let these guys come back, and he's exhorting them, giving them money, and they bring back the sacred vessels, which they need, and they need to be rebuilt in a certain way. Even I read the Phoenicians are supposed to do parts of it and all this stuff. And Cyrus is doing this clearly just God's providence.
Yeah.
He's Persian. I mean, it's like,
I know.
And I thought, I was thinking like ourselves, it's like, we're given everything we need. I mean, we have the sacraments.
Yeah.
We have confession. We got Eucharist. We have communion. We have adoration. As a priest, I got a boatload of people praying for me. God just inspires that. It's amazing to see that. People will ask him, pray for us. I am praying. They all say that,
I know.
And it's like, we're given, okay, are you going to rebuild the temple here? Yeah. Are you going to do the Lord's work? Are you going to have right worship? Are you going to bring it in order?
Yeah.
Are we going to squander it?
I know. Well, and that's exactly it, right? How do we, and I think this is the receptive posture that's needed. How do we recognize all of these gifts as gifts and really receive them and not let them go by the wayside? It's like, okay, how do I live in such a way that somebody telling me that he's praying for me means something? You know, how do I, and this is maybe going back to what we said at the beginning of just the importance of staying in the present moment. If we do that, each moment carries a new depth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, gosh, if I could just appreciate the depth in each moment and each gift that's given to me, I would probably be much holier. You know, I'd probably receive these gifts in a much more all-encompassing way. But we so quickly, like, you know, I've got all these things, I've got all these gifts. It's like, yes, but how about just the one gift that's given right now? Receive that. That will teach you to receive the other gifts, you know, the next time you encounter God in adoration, the next time. Just to receive each gift as it's given gives us a disposition of soul, I think, that's really needed. To be moved and to find God and live in this really contemplative way.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. And I know you're on a busy schedule. Don't worry out here, Father. But keep up the good work.
No, thank you. Please pray for me.